यथा तदनुसार
निगारदग्धास्यथाहिमं कुदेहमना हि ददस्तदृष्टे
ब्रह्मादचस्थे मृतम् औषधम् मेरे. O best of the Brahmins, my body is filled with dirty things, and my vision has been bitten by the serpent of pride. Due to my material conceptions, I am diseased. Your nectarine instructions are the proper medicine for one suffering from such a fever, and they are cooling waters for one scorched by the heat. Put forth by His divine grace to the Prabhupada. The conditioned soul has a body full of dirty things, bones, blood, urine, stool, and so forth. Nonetheless, the most intelligent men in this material world think that they are combinations of blood, bone, urine, and stool. If this is so, why can't other intelligent men be made with these ingredients which are so readily available? The entire world is going under the bodily conception and creating a hellish condition unfit for any gentleman's living. The instructions given by King Rahugana to Jagbharat are very valuable. They are like the medicine that can save one from a snake bite. The Vedic instructions are like nectar and cool water for one suffering from scorching heat. Today we are reading from the fifth canto, chapter 12, from the Srimad Bhagavatam. It is entitled, King Rahugana converses with Jagbharat. The setting for this story is most wonderful. You know the great story of Bharat Maharaj. I assume you should, because this great nation of India was named after him alone. Bharat Varsha, who is considered one of the great, great kings of this land during the Vedic civilization. Bharat Maharaj was one of the many sons of Maharaj Rishabhdev. Rishabhdev was an incarnation of Lord Narayan, who came to this world especially for the purpose of establishing religious principles by his words and by his example. As Krishna says in the Gita, yad yad acharati sreshtam tad eveta rojana sayat pramanam kurute lokastad anuvartate. This means that what the great leaders of society do, the common men will naturally follow in their footsteps. Whatever great persons do by their exemplary acts, the common man will pursue. Now, when we speak of a leader in society, each and every one of us, according to our own circle in which we are living, we are meant to be leaders. The father is the leader of his family. Similarly, the mother is also a leader of the family. A teacher is leader of students. A guru is leader of disciples. A politician is the leader of the citizens. Now, when we talk about Raj Ram, when we talk about Bharat Varsha, what is the real integrity of this great land of India, we must refer to the scriptures. Guru na sasyat, swajini na sasyat, pita na sasyat, janini na sasyat. Lord Rishabhdev, being a leader, he was an incarnation who took the position of a king.
instructed all of humanity through the pages of the Bhagavatam that you have no right in the eyes of God to take any sort of leadership position unless you strive in such a way that those who follow you, those who are dependent on you, never have to take birth again in this material world. Therefore, you have no right to become a guru. You have no right to be a teacher. You have no right to be a king or a politician. You have no right to be a father or a mother unless you understand what is the goal of life and you understand how to guide your dependents in such a way that they never have to suffer the repetition of birth and death again. Today, people become doctors. A doctor is also a leader. People become teachers. People become politicians. And sometimes, people even become gurus as a matter of business for some economic stability in their life. Some people become parents simply because they like to have children, because they're fond of little children. According to God, according to Lord Rishabhdev, anyone who thinks like this is a cheater and a rascal. And if you want to know what the problem in this world is, it's because everyone is following in the footsteps of cheaters and rascals. There is no problem except a lack of Krishna consciousness. People are not willing to accept the responsibility of the human form of life, which is self-realization. And if human society is not guided by leaders who take the real responsibility of self-realization as their foremost purpose in life, there is no solution to the chaos, the problems, and the strife and suffering in this world. And all of our great, great organized efforts are shallow and empty. If a person has a deadly disease, you don't cover it with a bandage. You go to the source of the disease, of the blood, and you cure it. We're living in a bandage society. Just cover it up. Make some superficial external change, but we don't see the problem anymore. Don't blame anyone else. The solution begins with you and me. We should know that we are all created by God, and we are all responsible 24 hours a day before the God of our life. He's within our heart. He's within and between every atom. He's the witness of every activity, every event in this entire creation. And our responsibility to God is not simply to feed our children. The birds are bringing worms to their little birdies in the nest also. The rats are also bringing food to their little children in the hole in the wall. The duty of our life is not simply to create a nice, comfortable home for our children and our family members, because the rats and the birds are building their nests and their holes in the walls too. The duty is not to make a big, big, great name for yourself, which in due course of time is probably going to be trampled in the mud before you die anyway. There is one responsibility that is king foremost in all of our lives. Nayam deho deha bhajam niloke kastan kamadar hadi vibhugam jay tapo divyam putraka yena satvam sudyedyasam brahma sofyam panantam. Lord Rishabhdev instructs us, now that you have taken this very, very rare human form of life,
which is meant for self-realization, and which is so difficult to obtain after 8,400,000 species the soul evolves. Do not waste this human life endeavoring for the sense gratifications of this world, which are available to the dogs and the hogs that eat stool. Tapo divyam putrika yena satvam. Human life is meant for one purpose only, that is self-realization. It is meant for the purpose of performing tapasya, tapo divyam, for self-realization. Because there is no question of spiritual advancement without tapasya. What does tapasya mean? It means simply to live in harmony with the desire of God, and to put aside all things that are contrary to God's will in our life. And especially that means to put aside the popular opinion of those persons who are trying to lead us through social pressure against the will of God. You see, in Kali Yuga, this is an age of quarrel and hypocrisy. It is an age where the general masses, turn this down a little, the general masses are becoming more and more chasing after the illusions of a godless world. And therefore, if one takes seriously to spiritual life, people will laugh at you. People will disassociate with you. People will think that you're crazy. Human life is meant for self-realization, but the popular idea of religion is human life is meant for economic development and sense gratification, and religion is just something we practice on the side just to increase or enhance the sweetness of our sense gratification and economic development. Is this not so? And if you take your spiritual life too seriously, people think you're becoming a fanatic. You're not being practical. You're not of this world. Go to the temple once a week, hear Bhagavad Gita, but chanting the holy name every day, associating with sadhus regularly, this is too much. Has everyone heard this type of propaganda? Tapasya means being willing to tolerate all this and to go on with our spiritual practices. Aham bija pratapita. Because Krishna says, I am the supreme father of every living being. And our duty is to fulfill the desire of that supreme father. Human life is meant for this. To make the crest jewel, the summum bonum, goal of all of our activities in life, the realization of our eternal relationship with Krishna. It is not that we should put things aside for everything else, and what's extra we'll give to Krishna. It is just the opposite. We should first give the best we have for Krishna. And then what's left, we maintain ourselves. How will I live if I do like that? People are very much in this idea of insurance these days. But factually, insurance is all an illusion. There is only one insurance, Krishna's mercy. Because whatever we invest in the service of Krishna is never lost. Whatever we invest in the things of this world will be lost, inevitably, either today or tomorrow. So therefore, in the eyes of God, this is our first and foremost responsibility. That we personally pursue the path of self-realization, and we teach our children, if we are parents, that this is the goal of life. It is said in the Bhagavatam that if a man and a woman come together in marriage, the success of their marriage is if their children are all great devotees of God. It says nothing about how much money they leave them in a will. It says nothing about what their educational qualifications may be in this world. Only one thing, that they are devotees of the Lord. That is the success. That is the perfection in the eyes of God. And all of these other things are only important to the extent that they are utilized in pursuance of service to Krishna. We can have wealth. We can have educational qualifications. But we use it in Krishna's service. We use it on the path of self-realization. We use it for the betterment of the spirituality of humanity. Yesterday we were asked to give a short talk at a hospital. And we were thinking that curing a sick man is a very important service to humanity. But in and of itself, it has very little value. Because the idea of healing a person should not be that it is my business and I'm getting paid for it. The idea should be that I am compassionate, that this is my brother and my sister. And to see the suffering another causes me suffering, so let me extend myself to help this person out of suffering. Now, if you heal a person and tell him to go back and live his life, which is full of bad habits, then he'll just have to accept the same suffering again. How have you helped him? Just putting a bandage over the problem. It is said that cleanliness is next to godliness. If you want to cure disease, you should educate people how to live hygienically. How to go to bathroom properly, how to cook properly, how to use proper water, how to have proper standards within the home of cleanliness, where you will not contract diseases. But this is just the grossest level of cleanliness. When we say cleanliness is guest to godliness, there's something more. Sinful life is dirty. And when you commit sinful activities, the karma of that sinful activity must come back upon you and cause you suffering, whether it be in the form of disease or some other strife. There are four regulative principles that the Bhagavatam describes, which are the pillars of sinful activities. No illicit sex. If you have illicit sex, guaranteed 100%, you will suffer like an animal, and worse. Because the karmic reaction will cause a torturous condition in your mind and your body today or tomorrow. There's no escape. If you engage in intoxication, the karmic reaction will be to cover you with an illusion, with ignorance, which will cause tremendous suffering. Gambling, in a wanton and whimsical way, taking the property of God and utilizing it for your own horrible excitement, when that same money can be utilized for so many good activities to help so many others. There's horrible consequences for gambling and the eating of meat. Every bit of pain caused to an animal for your satisfaction, you have to suffer that pain 100-fold yourself. So if you're actually concerned with helping somebody out of a suffering condition, you have to teach them how to live a clean life. How to live in harmony with the laws of God. Otherwise, you're just a hypocrite. Oh, I am so compassionate, I am so kind, I am helping you out of your disease, but then I send you back into the mouth of that same suffering. We must learn to educate people how to live a clean life, hygienically as well as spiritually. That is compassion. And it is the duty of everyone who is in a leadership position, who has dependents taking guidance and direction from them, to be compassionate, to show them the way where they never have to suffer again, by showing them how to live in harmony with the laws of God. So these were the basic instructions of Lord Rishabhdev to his sons. He told them, now Bharat, he is the eldest amongst you. He will be king. You all cooperate with him and live according to these principles. So Bharat Maharaj ruled the kingdom for a long time. And he ruled very, very exactly according to the principles of Dharma. But when it came time for him to enthrone his son as king, he knew that he had to set a proper example by leaving the world behind him and pursuing simply the path of self-realization. While he was king, he was the most responsible father. He was the most responsible brother. He was the most responsible husband. He was the most responsible servant of all of society. He lived in his palace for Krishna. But he wanted to show the world that after we finish our duty in this way, our only duty is to emerge our consciousness in the loving service of the Lord. So it describes that Bharat Maharaj, he left his beautiful family, he left his wonderful palatial palace, he left all the fine foods cooked by the best cooks, he left his royal robes, and he went into the forest, taking nothing with him except his faith in God. It is said that he left all the luxuries of this world with the same indifference as a man who leaves his stool on the ground after passing it. He didn't even turn back. And he went to the holy land of the Himalayas, and he took residence on the banks of the Gandaki River, one of the great sacred rivers of India. And there, he simply practiced meditation on the super soul within his heart. And he became so much purified that ecstatic symptoms of love gradually began to awaken more and more and more and more. Tears were filling his eyes, his limbs would tremble, his hairs would stand on end at the mere thought of Sri Krishna. At every step in our spiritual progress, we will be tested. From the beginning until we leave this material world behind, there will always be tests. Somebody yesterday was asking me, one of our devotees, that when I first came to spiritual life, everything was so exciting and wonderful. When I was chanting the holy name, I could be so conscious of the sound vibration. It was such a beautiful, enrapturing type of meditation. And following the regulative principles, my mind was just anxious to live a pure life, a sinless life. And devotional service, I was so eager to do everything and anything. But now, I've been a devotee for many years. Now when I try to chant, my mind starts running every other direction except the name. And sometimes I feel no enthusiasm for devotional service. And my mind sometimes is filled with thoughts of sinful activities. Am I doing something wrong? Or perhaps this process, I don't understand. What is happening? Why? You see, when you first come to Krishna consciousness, Maya, the personification of the illusory energy, she does not see you being much of a threat to her. Because factually, at least 95% of people who come to spiritual life, just on their own, due to their own insincerity, leave shortly after. So Maya Devi knows that most likely, as far as the odds go, I don't have to do anything against you. You're just going to leave on your own. Just because spiritual life becomes troublesome after some time. So therefore, when you first come to Krishna, Maya does not take you seriously. She just lets you, as you like, chant the holy names, live a sinful life. I don't take you seriously. Just like a parent when a child says, I'm going to take this vow, and I'm never going to do this again. The parent says, yes, of course, why not? But after so many years of deepening your commitment and deepening your determination and taking on responsibilities for Krishna, for making propaganda, which is going to actually threaten the position of Maya in this world, then Maya starts taking you seriously. Then she starts planning out a major attack against you. From within and from without. And then there's all sorts of problems. It seems it was so easy when I was new. It's because you weren't a threat. Maya just let you go on your way. But now you're a threat. Now she's going to show all of her teeth and do everything she can to divert you away. Because that is her service. She must do that. But in the heart of her heart, she's hoping you'll pass all the tests. Because she knows that actually she's helping the devotee. If this devotee is sincere, the more I make life horribly difficult for him, the more he's going to develop faith. The more he's going to receive the mercy of Krishna, and the more he's going to be empowered to do the greatest, most wonderful works to please the Lord. And if the person is not sincere, then I've done my service. I've sorted out the sincere for the unsincere, for Krishna can see plainly who's really his devotee. But Krishna says in the Gita, Api chet sudaracharo bhajate mam ananya bhak sadhur eva samantavya samya bhavishito hisha. That if one is sincere on this path, even if due to previous conditioning, Maya overcomes you and causes you to fall down into the most abominable position of life, in the eyes of Krishna, you are still saintly. Kshipram bhavati dharmatma shashvashanti. He says that very soon I will pick that person up and make him righteous again. Dharmatma. The definition of dharmatma in this sense is a soul who is following dharma, who falls down due to the influence of the temptations of Maya. But because of his sincere heart, Krishna picks him up. And that devotee only benefits and learns from the experience. So here Bharat Maharaj was sitting alone in seclusion, in the forests of the Himalayas, on the bank of the holy sacred river Gandaki, merged in a very, very high level of spiritual life on the path of bhakti. And naturally, he was becoming more and more compassionate, more and more selfless, more and more of a loving, soft-hearted person. So Maya understood, what am I going to do to this person? He's already left his beautiful family. He's left all the luxuries of the world. He's left the power and the fame of being king. He's left food. How am I going to tempt this person? Maya is so clever. His only weakness is that he's too kind to others. So she sent a deer. A mother deer who was pregnant with a baby in her womb. And that deer was being chased by a lion. She was running for her life. And she came right by the small hermitage of Bharat Maharaj. And that deer jumped to cross over the Gandaki River as her only hope of escaping the jaws of this hungry lion. And at that time, the lion roared. And she became so overwhelmed with fear that she had a miscarriage. The baby fell into the river. She finished her leap to the other side, and when she saw her helpless baby drowning in the river, it caused her so much grief that she fell down in the ground and died. And Bharat Maharaj was thinking, my God, who's going to care for this little baby? So with his own tender and loving hands, he rescued that baby deer from the sea. And then he realized that now I am the mother, I am the father. So he started collecting nice foodstuffs to feed the deer and built a nice little place for it to sleep, protected it during the day and during the night from dangerous animals and the other inflictions of nature. And as the months went by, he was so much engrossed in taking care of the deer that he stopped chanting the holy name. He stopped meditating on Krishna. He stopped all of his spiritual disciplines. He became utterly attached to this deer. And at times when the deer got a little older, when it did not come home on time, he was in tremendous anxiety. He would be overwhelmed with concern, with care due to this attachment. He would just go chasing through the forest, calling out, where are you? Where are you? Oh, Mother Earth, have you seen my deer? Oh, clouds in the sky, where is she? Oh, trees. This way he was utterly engrossed in this illusion. And when he became old, the deer would lick his body and he would think, ah, how nice. The deer would lay on his body and he would say, oh, how nice. And he died. And Krishna says in Gita, Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam jijachante kalevaram tam taima vaiti konte yasatatad bhava bhavata. What you think of at the time of death, that becomes your next birth. So he took his next birth as a deer. But because of his saintliness, because of his spiritual dedication to the path of God consciousness, even though he fell down from his position, Krishna was always in his heart. Kshipram bhavati dharamatma shashvachanti. He said, I always protect my devotee. Konte atta prati jane hiname bhakta pranashya. Krishna gave him full awareness of his previous life. Thinking, my God, what a crazy fool I am. I gave up everything of this world to pursue the only real goal, self-realization, and right at the last minute, before I attained pure love of God, I became attached to this deer. Therefore, as a deer, he simply went to those places where the great saints were reciting the Bhagavatam and the holy scriptures and chanting kirtan. And he would simply always be immersed in hearing the glorious narrations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then he left his body as a deer, and his next birth, he was born in a very, very high civilized family of Brahmins. But in this birth, he understood that false ego and prestige is the greatest enemy. And here I am a Brahmin, and people will give me so much credit. They will give me so much recognition and respect. This is a great disturbance. The best way for me to fix my mind on Krishna is to let everyone think I'm mad, I'm crazy, and I'm useless. Then I'll always remain humble. So he did everything utterly wrong. The Bhagavatam explains he was so useless that his brother just put him like a scarecrow, just stood him in the cornfields just to keep the crows away. They felt that's all he would, that's one way of keeping him out of the way. It is a long story of the life of Jodh Bharat. But eventually he was cast away and he just lived in the jungles. But one day a great king named Rahugana, he was traveling on a palanquin being carried by his servants. One of the servants fell sick, so they needed a fourth man in one of the front sides of the palanquin. So some of his people went into the jungle and they found Jodh Bharat, who had a very strong body. They thought, he is fit. So they put him in the service of the king. Now for Jodh Bharat, do you think he had any special respect for this king? He already went through being the greatest king in all of the history of India, in the history of the world. He was not impressed by the fact that this person was a king. So as far as he was concerned, he was just going to go about his business. But they forced him. He was living as an avaduta. He appeared like a very low-class man, all dirty and everything. Carry this palanquin. So he carried. But he was going to carry the way he wanted to carry. So when some little ants crossed on the road, he stopped. But of course the other three, they did not stop. So you know what happens on a palanquin when three people go and one person stops. Everything goes like this. And the king is the person who goes, "Zoop." What is this? Why is this happening? Everyone pointed. This man stopped. Why you are stopping, rascal? I am the king. You follow my directions. You don't stop until I tell you to stop. He didn't say anything. Just started walking. Again, some little ants started crossing the road. And he stopped. Zoop. The king was becoming very annoyed. "If you do this again, I will cut off your head. I will kill you. You will be punished." Jodh Bharat was, "What do I care for this man with all of his power and all of his money and all of his prestige? I had it all. It's all an illusion." So he went on walking according to his order. And again, when some little insects crossed the path, he stopped. The king just was furious, raving, insulting Jodh Bharat like anything, calling him all foul names, threatening him in so many ways. Jodh Bharat very calmly, compassionately looked at the king, this poor fellow, and then he spoke. He looked like a retarded madman, but when he spoke, it was like the river Ganges of transcendental knowledge flowing from his lotus-like mouth. He said, "My dear king, today you are king, and I am just your insignificant servant. But tomorrow, I may be the king, and you may be my insignificant servant." See, he was speaking from realization, because he had been in both positions himself. "This is all the bodily concept of life, my dear king. It is only due to false ego that you are thinking yourself better than me, or that you are thinking yourself better than anyone. We are the eternal soul. No man is better than any other man. God is great. We are all his insignificant servants. We are all equal. You have your duties, I have my duties. But on the spiritual platform, we all have only one duty, and that is to satisfy Krishna. It is due to your uncontrolled, contaminated mind that you are identifying with this body, and you are so proud of your position and your power over me and others. But if you want to know the truth, You have to humble yourself before the great sages and take shelter of the loving service of the Lord. And you have to learn to treat all living beings with respect, knowing that God is in their heart. In this way, he instructed the king. And when the king heard Rahugana, the wonderful words of Jadbharat, he got down off of his palanquin. He bowed at the feet of this great soul and surrendered his life as his disciple. What you are saying is true. Throughout my life, I have been in great illusion. All of these dualities have simply ensnared me in false ego, thinking I am better than anyone else because of my position, because of my power, because of my wealth. Here is Jadbharat, who was totally banished by society. He acted so retarded that even the most common people used to throw abominable substance at him, spit on him, pass urine on him, and do all kinds of abominable things to insult him because they thought he was crazy. And everyone bowed their head to the king. But when the king understood the words of Jadbharat, the king bowed his head at his lotus feet. This false ego, Jadbharat explains, is very powerful, and it is the cause of all suffering and disease. Our real ego is to understand that we are all subordinate to Krishna, all of us, whoever we are, and to please him and to serve him. So after hearing these wonderful instructions on hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord as the only remedy for the great disease of the bodily concept of life, King Rahugna spoke, "O most exalted personality, you are not different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By the influence of your true self, all kinds of contradiction in the shastras have been removed. In the dress of a friend of a Brahmin, you are hiding your transcendental blissful position. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. O best of the Brahmins, my body is filled with dirty things and my vision has been bitten by the serpent of pride." You see, when one actually starts coming out of the illusion of the intoxication of ego, that I am this body and those things in relationship to this body are mine, however great you are, you come to this conclusion. When you come in contact with the great souls and hear their words, whatever your position is in society, you are most fortunate if you come to this conclusion, that my body is filled with dirty things and my vision has been bitten by the serpent of pride. Due to my material conceptions, I am diseased. Your nectarine instructions are the proper medicine for one suffering from such a fever, and they are cooling waters for one scorched by the heat. King Rahugna had everything a person in this world could ever want. But when he saw the greatness of Jadbharat, who had everything a person in this world does not want, this was his conclusion. "Whatever doubts I have about a particular subject matter, I shall ask you about later. For the time being, these mysterious yoga instructions you have given me for self-realization appear very difficult. Please repeat them in a simple way so that I can understand them. My mind is very inquisitive and I want to understand this directly." And then Jadbharat explains him the simple process which he himself was personally following of always thinking of Krishna. This is the goal of life. This is the great responsibility we have. And this is the great responsibility we have in regard to all others. To show the way,
how to always think of Krishna.
That same Lord who appeared as Rishabhdev, who planted the seed of transcendental knowledge in the heart of Maharaj Bharat, that same Lord has appeared in this age of Kali Yuga to teach the means by which all of us can always remember Krishna by chanting his holy name.